Welcome to Under the Fig Tree podcast. In today's episode, hosts Reverend Micah Glenn and Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt sit down with a special guest as they meditate under the fig tree.
What's up? Welcome back once again to another episode of Under the Fig Tree. I'm your host, Reverend Micah Glenn, the Director of Recruitment here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, always joined by my friend and co-host, Reverend Dr. Ben Haupt. How are you today, bro?
I'm good. I just noticed, actually, as you were delivering your opening line, it gave me a second to realize that you have some nice sneakers on that I don't know that I've ever seen before. So for our Spotify listeners, you gotta actually describe them, but maybe we can even get them on camera for our YouTube watchers.
Okay. Well, so they're Nikes. You've already kind of baited me out once and asked how many pairs of shoes I have. Here's one pair. We could probably do this for a very long time.
Oh, we could.
But they're Nike Foamposites. I can't remember what style they are, but if you Google Nike Foamposites, you'll get an idea of the style of the shoe. It's interesting how things come back around. So, growing up, Jordans were a big thing for us. Every year they'd come out with a new pair. And so, like, people would line up in big lines. And
did you have the version that you could pump up?
Well, those aren't Jordans, but...
Oh, those aren't Jordans.
Jordans never had pump-ups, but okay. There were, like, Nike pump-ups other brand shoes. I did have a pair of pump shoes, and then, like, you release it. I definitely had a pair of pumps once upon a time. But, yeah, these came out a long time ago. Hmm. Do you remember Penny Hardaway? I'm asking the wrong person. They were his signature shoe when he played basketball in the 90s.
I think maybe I had a basketball card because I was a card collector. So that's
fair.
It's the only way I would have known.
They either came out in like the late 90s or like the early 2000s. I can't actually remember. But yeah,
I have on my dressy brown shoes. I have one other brown pair of shoes. These are the dressy brown, and I have one pair of black shoes. And then I have a pair of tennis shoes.
Next time you get some brown dress shoes, you should go for monk straps.
Monk straps?
So they're just the strap instead of laces.
Oh.
All right. Okay, enough of this.
So, hey, fair enough. Yeah.
Let's move on.
moving on from our shoes.
I'll talk to Selena. Yeah, all right. We are joined by a guest, second-year seminarian Daniel Buckman. How are you, bro?
I'm doing all right. I'm also not a sneakerhead, so don't ask me to show my shoes.
That's fine. Listen, everybody has their thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have your thing. You know, when I introduced you, and we had this conversation before we had you on, me and Ben both want to call you Daniel Beekman.
Yeah.
Because that's the German way.
Well, I was talking to a German foreign exchange student last year.
Yeah.
And the UE would turn into an umlaut.
Right.
So it would be Beekman. Buchmann.
No, yeah, it wouldn't be Buckman.
No, well, not Buckman.
Or Buchmann.
It would be Buchmann, or it could be Beekman. So in German, you typically pronounce the second vowel of a diphthong,
okay,
which is two vowels connected.
And so, the way that you pronounce a diphthong for the U is make the sound of oo with your lips, but then say E.
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 That's Beekman. That's U Beekman. Umlaut.
Beekman.
Yeah. Beekman.
Wow, I'm learning how to say my own name. That's pretty cool.
This is German linguistics lesson 101. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, well, welcome to the podcast. You are, in fact, the first student that we've had on Under the Fig Tree.
Wow. Well, I'm happy and honored to be here. That's awesome.
So Daniel works...
Of this season.
What other student has been on?
Mason Beath.
Oh, sorry.
Well, that shout out to Mason Beath.
Pastor.
I still remember you, Mason. But yes, he is a pastor. And that was on our very first season.
It feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
When we were still kind of in COVID living.
That might have been, that was shot.
Oh, it was definitely on Zoom.
Over Zoom.
And it was probably like the second or third episode ever.
Yeah.
If you're a new listener.
Wow. So that was the last time that we had a student while we were still in the...
Wow. So you were either scarred by it or you were having a great time and just wanted to have me back.
I mean, so like the show has evolved. And so it started on Zoom and then we kind of had a makeshift studio, recording studio. And then the comms team built us a live set.
Yeah.
And so, you know... You don't block it out. You just move with the times. I didn't forget about Mason. I just forgot that He was a guest on the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, but you work in our department as a student worker.
I do.
Daniel gives tours, helps with events, probably does a number of other things for our department that, you know, somebody else tells you to do, probably Sarah and Monica. But
tell us what year are you and what program are you in?
I'm a second year MDiv student. So I'm studying to become a pastor here in a couple of years. I'm looking forward to vicarage at the end of this year, my call day assignment.
What does MDiv stand for?
MDiv is Masters of Divinity. So
if he was going, he almost paused there, and I thought if he can't say this, we might actually have to. We just had our professor review meeting where we review all the students, and you.
Oh, did you, I pass?
You passed. Nobody brought you up and said, you know, that good. Daniel.
I'm a troublemaker.
We do all of that in love, and it's all for the sake of helping our students. Yeah. But no, your name didn't come up. So
that's good.
Which is a good thing. Yeah. So
as a student, because you know, get to ask you these questions a little bit. What are your courses that you're taking? You don't have to go through all of them, but what is it like? Second year is a little different than first year. You get your feet wet, and then you come back in the fall, and it's like, all right, now graduate school. Here we go. Yeah. Get to it.
First year, you kind of focus on the Greek and kind of the New Testament stuff.
Yeah.
I came in from a public school. A big university background, so I never took any of the Greek or Hebrew.
Yeah.
So the summer before my first year, I took Greek, and then we used that in like synoptic gospels and interpreting and communicating the word using Greek. And this year, I just finished summer Hebrew, and I passed.
We're
celebrating that, and we're going into, I just finished up Torah with Dr. Adams. And
what's
now I'm
Torah?
Torah, kind of the first five books of the Bible.
But what does it mean, though?
You tell me what it means.
Well, it means law, but you're the student, not me.
Oh, well, too late. I just asked you anyway. Hey, it means
He's
law.
In that class right now, right?
No, so I just finished that one. We were working through the book of Exodus,
kind of looking
at all the story arcs in that, really how there's so much gospel in the book of Exodus.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And everybody thinks of the Old Testament as being so heavily focused on law that they never think about. There's so much gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything really points to Jesus in the entire Bible. That's why it's all there. So it was really cool to see that. And now
Sounds
we're going.
Like he learned some things.
He's
in
getting
that
there. Yeah,
it's good.
If nothing else, I can give a sales pitch for the class.
Nice.
Now I'm getting into prophets with Dr. Golden. Okay. I've had one in-class session, one Zoom session so far. So it's been good. It's been interesting. And I'm really excited to see that take off.
So all of our listeners know the Bible. Right, and they've read some of the Bible. They've studied the Bible. So, what is different from like in church? Our prospective students, they're reading the Bible in Bible study, Bible class at church. Mm-hmm. That's one kind of thing. How is sitting in a seminary classroom studying a specific book of the prophets? How is it different, or how is it both similar and different?
Well, you're reading the same text. It might not be the same language.
Sure.
Instead of reading English in the pew or in the Bible study, you're going to be looking at the original language.
Yeah.
And then you're also going to be looking at the cultural context of the day, kind of understanding more of the social norms of what it's like to be in ancient Israel and kind of what things look like. Like today in systematics, we were talking about head coverings and what it looked like kind of in that time and how now... Sure. It can kind of be equated to like wedding rings with just the social changes in society. So you're looking at some of the cultural context and also some of the nuances of how English has been translated.
Yeah. So in some ways, it's like taking Bible study and just going way deep
to the nitty-gritty.
And and some of the best Bible studies in the parish are deep.
Yeah.
But this is just kind of being at that level all the time.
Yeah.
Do you have to translate? So we have the Hebrew text, we have the English text, the whole Hebrew and Greek Bible has been translated into English, but tell us what that's like.
Yeah.
Professor or Dr. Golden calls on you. Daniel, why don't you do some translating for us? What is that?
Yeah, so I haven't had that happen yet. Thank goodness.
I'm going to have to talk to Dr. Gold. Say,
what are they doing in class these days?
Holy cow.
We're only two sessions in now.
I mean, all right. What are they doing in class these days?
No, so the way it's going to be is we're broken up into groups, and we're all going to translate a couple of verses together, and then there's going to be a spokesman for that group.
Oh, nice.
Going through parsing each of the verbs and talking about the nuances and some of the textual variations and variants that are depicted in the BHS. Mm.
And so that's a little bit different than when I was in class and the Old Testament professor would say, Haupt, you have verse 4. What's it say?
Yeah.
And then you just start and like, You either hope that you really did your homework and you have all of your translation notes, or that you've memorized that verse in English, but that's usually called the weasel translation, and they just won't allow it.
And you get baited out. So yeah. I had Dr. Robbie for both Hebrew readings and then an independent study. So it'd be, well, put your English Bibles away.
Yeah.
And then at the beginning of class, depending on the class, he might even say, put your notes away. And so we're just sitting there with the BHS. And that really...
What's BHS?
The Biblia Hebraica Stuttgartensia. The Latin phrase. I've never learned Latin, guys.
The official Hebrew
text
version of the Old Testament.
And we could go into Masoretes and things like that. We should have somebody come on and talk about that. And so then, that's how you know who's done their homework and who's tried to memorize it when they get there and they go... and they start stuttering over words. It's like, bro, you translate it or not? Like, Let's do this, but you should be generous to your classmates. Yeah. Don't be a jerk, but yeah. So now that's good though.
Now they're pairing you up into groups.
Yeah, it's more of a group setting, so that it's good. It's more of a group thing to have a better translation as opposed to somebody who kind of understands it. But you also have the verses beforehand, which you have to translate before class, going in and saying, "Hey, okay, this is what this says." And I mean, last quarter for Torah when I took that. We had to lead a Hebrew lab.
Mm.
A small group of us had to lead a Hebrew lab. And so I took the first three verses. My friend took the next three. And then my other friend took the next three. Nice. And we had to teach the entire hour on that eight or nine verses from Exodus.
You know what I love about that is it actually reminds me a lot of my time when I was a pastor in the parish. Because we had a group of pastors, LCMS pastors, that would get together. We got together on Tuesday mornings at a Panera Bread Company. They didn't call it St. Louis Bread Company in North Georgia, but I knew that it was really St. Louis Bread Company. But we got together at Panera, and we would, for 10 days out, so not that coming Sunday, but the following Sunday, we'd translate through all the readings, the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Gospel, and if we had time, sometimes we would do a psalm. And it was very much a collaborative group process. But we were just sitting there with Greek and Hebrew and slogging through it. But it was amazing Bible study. And we had one guy that was really good in Hebrew, a couple other guys that were much better in Greek, but it was a group process. So
there's actually a book that was recommended to us by Dr. Penn Halligan. It's a devotional book, 365 days, where it has an Old Testament verse in Hebrew to translate, and it gives you a short little lexicon underneath it. It's got a verse in Greek with a short little lexicon as well, and then it's also got a catechism reading along with it. And
is that Light on the Way?
What is this called?
Something like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. I have it in my notes. So
That was written by a German pastor, actually, and it was originally called Licht auf dem Weg, is light on the path or light on the way.
I think it is that.
Light on the path.
Light on the way.
Look it up on Amazon just in case. If you're you know, because it does it give you a translation as well, or do you have to do the
translation? No, you have to do the translation. It does give you like a glossary.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's basically assumes that you've had like basic Hebrew.
I was going
to
say, if you don't know the syntax or grammar, you won't be able to, to translate.
But if somebody is working on learning Greek or Hebrew kind of on their own, it's a good way to just have a small little bit of Greek and Hebrew every day.
Yeah. Well, and then variance in authors, because not every Greek author writes the same, and not every Hebrew author writes the same either. Right, Isaiah, that independent class I had with Dr. Robbie, we were going through the oracles against the nations in Isaiah. I love Isaiah when you read him in English, but if you have to translate him in Hebrew, he'll drive you crazy. It just, there's these words, it's hapax legomena, that are used like once, and the writer is making it up to make up a word to convey a meaning that he wants to make up. So it's not a part of a regular gloss. It can be frustrating for a non-expert.
Yeah, I'm just starting to look at Isaiah, and that's what we're going to be working through in this prophets class, and it's going to be a lot.
It'll make you sharp at Hebrew, though.
Oh, yeah.
That was my worst grade at the seminary.
Was it?
Was Isaiah and the prophets.
All right.
Yeah. I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I mean, I can do Greek and Hebrew. I spent 3 years in undergrad in Greek and 2 years in Hebrew.
I have to say, but I enjoy Hebrew more than I do Greek. Purely because for me, Hebrew is very structured and orderly. And also, I just took it last summer as opposed to Greek.
There you go.
Well, wait till you get to Isaiah. Right. So the grammar and syntax is more simple than Greek. Mm-hmm. And I tell guys when they're looking for help in Hebrew, I say, if you memorize verbs, you get most of the language. Greek, I tell people, don't look at vocabulary until you've done your homework, but
I think my grade mostly had to do with playing too much Halo, and we've talked about that on this show before. So
video games will get you.
Well,
Dan, you're currently a student, but before you became a student, there had to be some type of process where either somebody was encouraging you or you had some kind of internal desire, because you went to a public university in Tennessee.
I went public school. Preschool through University of Tennessee. Right. Go Vols, by the way. Go Vols.
Okay. Their football team's not bad this year, right?
Oh, we're good. Okay. We just beat Alabama.
Oh, well, bang, bang. Mm-hmm. Top. Anyway, different conversation. What was your path? Answer this however you want. What was your path? What were the decisions? How was your discernment that led you to apply and to begin to pursue pastoral ministry?
That's a good question, because I feel like I kind of ran from it for a little bit.
Sure.
Can you say, yes, I want to pause there because I hear this from so many prospective students that they kind of know that they want to come. They know that they are supposed to come, but there are lots of reasons why people run the other way. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I originally kind of was interested in ministry when I was younger. There was an old guy at my church who came up to me and said, "All right, which side do you want to stand on?" Pointed to the lectern, pointed to the pulpit. And I kind of was like looking back and forth between the two. And I was like, well, there's a lot of different people that stand up on the left. That was the lectern. And then I looked over at the right and I was like, but they wear really cool robes. I was like, they're like Jedis up there. I mean, I was like, I want to stand on the right. Anyhow, I was just a little kid and the guy was old. He had white hair, walked with a cane. That's the only thing I knew. So I still have no idea who he is to this day. But that kind of sparked it. And then it just ebbed and flowed over the years. You know, middle school came back up like, hey, you know, maybe I do want to do ministry. And then
was that guy just like there talking with you for just a few minutes and then you never saw him again in your entire life?
It was like enough time to ask me that question. Huh. And then I don't honestly know if I've ever seen him again.
Listen, seeds get planted by a lot of different people and you never know.
And then finally I get to college.
Did he look like Morgan Freeman?
I would have remembered a voice like that. No.
Sorry. All right.
Yeah.
Entertaining angels unawares.
I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, no. Did not sound like Morgan Freeman.
All right. All right.
That would have been real cool, though.
That would have been. Yeah. So I was about to graduate high school, and I was thinking I was going to go in the military. And then my girlfriend at the time said, no, don't do that. So I said, all right, I'll go to university. So I did. I went to a community college for the first 2 years. Yep. It was free, and so I was getting a boosted GPA and everything else for when I transferred to state school. So I did that, doing a, kind of a scholarship thing. And while I was at Pellissippi, that was my community college. I was thinking
Pellissippi?
Pellissippi State. It's spelled like Mississippi, only with a P.
That sounds like a real Southern name to me.
Pellissippi State. There's a lot of words in the South. There's a road I like to tell this. There's a road that I drive. It's spelled D-A-N-T-E. How do you think it's said?
I would say dainty.
It is Dainty.
Okay.
Dainty.
Everybody says Dante.
Oh, no, right? No, no.
No, it's Dainty.
I did my vicarage Dainty. In Alabama, man.
Okay. You know. Yeah, I mean, you got Country Boy right there.
So. It's County yeah. Boy, but it's all good. Everybody thinks it's Country Boy. I mean, that's all right. Yeah. No, I'm definitely not a Country Boy.
Yeah.
It's all, nothing I against can tell Country with the sneakers. Boys. See? Yeah, exactly.
And community college, I was thinking, well, maybe. And I started just kind of thinking about it, and there's no big, you know, Lutheran presence. We kind of have a bubble.
Sure.
In East Tennessee. I always call it my island of East Tennessee because, you know, the only exposure I really had of a bunch of Lutherans is when I went to an NYG.
Oh, right.
Mm. I'd never been to a national youth gathering until, you know, my high school and time. And I was like, whoa, there's like a lot of Lutherans.
Sure.
Whoa. And that was cool. And then late all throughout college, I'd been working with the middle school youth at my home congregation of Grace Lutheran Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. Shout out to my guys. It was a great time. And while I was there studying business, I got a lot of words of affirmation saying, hey, have you ever thought about going into ministry?
Yeah.
Hey, have you ever thought about being a pastor?
Yeah.
Things like that. So that's where it started sparking this idea of, well, maybe. I thought about it before. It keeps coming back up. But around that time, I'd been offered 3 different jobs.
Hmm.
I'd been working at UPS my entire college career.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I had been hinted at, offered a driving position. They wanted me for upper management, which is a different way. And both of those within half dozen years or a decade or so, I'd be making probably 6 figures.
Hmm. Sure.
And then with my international kind of concentration in my business, I had a company that wanted me, and within a half dozen years, I'd be over an international portion of the company, managing over $100 million worth of merchandise and people.
I was just visiting a Lutheran high school, or Faith Lutheran high school in Las Vegas, which happens to be the largest LCMS Lutheran high school in the country, which blows my mind. You have to see it to believe it. It's one of those things, just because what they got going on there is so remarkable. But a student was saying, I want to go into business, and I was like, have you ever thought about international business?
Yeah.
And they were like, is that a thing? I was like,
oh, absolutely.
When you get ready for college, look it up. If business is your thing, focus on international business, and you'll always have a really good job.
I ended up with a business administration associates from the community college, and then I got a bachelor's in human resources management with a concentration in international business.
Yeah.
Awesome. So,
look at that.
And there's so much of that I would imagine applies to
absolutely
church and absolutely what the church is doing. So what does that look like to get a bachelor's degree in something other than theology? Some of our prospective student listeners might be going to college and studying theology, but I'll bet you a lot are not.
Mm-hmm.
So what was that like to study something totally different from theology? And What is that like when you come into the seminary classroom with that kind of unique background?
Yeah, it really brings a different perspective. Mm. I mean, I felt like I was behind, and I was a little worried about that. Because coming in, it's like, well, I don't know my Greek. I don't know my Hebrew. I don't know theology as well as these guys. Like, the last Lutheran catechesis class I really had was confirmation in 7th and 8th grade.
Right, sure.
And so I was nervous as all get out. But really, coming from a different background, you bring in different life experiences, different things that are really utilized in ministry. Like my networking skills and my communication skills. And I mean, I did grant writing in high school. By the time I graduated high school, I wrote over $150,000 worth of grants.
That'll come in
for
handy.
Monetary and, monetary and gift donations, food, things like that. So, you know, I've got a lot of business backgrounds and communications and networking backgrounds, but...
And that's why you work in the enrollment
office. I was going to say, it sounds like Dan is like trying to interview for a job.
We put all that to work. He's got it already.
I mean, this is just a stepping stone, getting this Master's of Divinity. I really want to be on the...
I mean, Nothing's impossible. I'm sitting here as a director of recruitment, so yeah. You never know. And I didn't study business, though.
Yeah, but I mean, with business background and human resources especially, you're dealing with people in the parish.
Yep.
You're working with people. It's a very social thing. You're getting to meet people where they're at in their lives. And being able to kind of talk to them on that level and bring the gospel to them wherever they're at, that's really kind of what we're here for.
So you're in college. Mm-hmm. You have incredible job opportunities, one where you could potentially be a globetrotter. I always encourage people to travel the world because the world is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it just opens your eyes to so many different things and open doors, networking. I just had a friend from Finland who's a pastor in Helsinki come and visit last week. So you just never know who you're going to bump into.
Oh.
You're getting close to your senior year. People are telling you that you should become a pastor. And, you know, we're kind of already in our admission cycle for the fall of 2023. Mm-hmm. What's going on in your head and what are the things that you're doing? It's the fall of, I imagine, you started in 2020?
So 2021.
So yes, the fall of 2020. Daniel
fall
Buckman,
of 2020.
Senior at University of Tennessee?
Yeah.
What's going on in your brain? And
well, I was tired of Zoom University, I'll tell you that.
Okay. Well, yeah, we all get that.
Everybody was tired of that, yeah.
So I was pushing hard that year. I mean, I had 20 credit hours. I had an internship at my church, and I worked at UPS.
Mm, right.
You know, some days it would be 3 days a week. Some days it would be 6 days a week, working 6 to 8 hours. So I was really busy.
Wow.
And ultimately, I realized by working at UPS and by working in kind of that environment, am I working to live or am I living to work?
Mm.
So am I working to live on the weekends and, you know, make that money during the week so that on the weekends I can rest and relax?
Right.
Or am I going out every day and excited to go to work and excited to interact with all these people and be just a happier person overall, even if I'm not getting paid perhaps six figures like I would have been?
You're singing music to my ears. I just spent 2 days telling high school students, because, you know, at the high school level, I tell them all the time, I would love for you to consider church work, pastor, deaconess, DCE, mm-hmm. teacher down the road as a potential profession. I was like, but no matter what you choose, right? Some people can be motivated by money. I tried mm-hmm. in my young adulthood to pursue career paths that would pay me a ton. That alone wouldn't work for me. I was like, so if you can find an overlap between lifestyle comfort, mm-hmm. whatever that means for you, that's going to be a sliding scale for all people, whatever that looks like, and join your job to where when you wake up in the morning, I never wake up here at CSL and say, man, I have to go to work. Like, I wake up and I'm like, man, it's such an incredible blessing of what I get to do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way in my part-time call. I feel that way as a graduate student. So if you can get there as an adult where lifestyle and joy for what you do
absolutely.
For a living overlap, I was like, that's inevitably what you want to be. You don't mm-hmm. want to be 5 years into a career and say, man, what a crappy day.
Yeah.
And I have to go to work.
And I think the other piece is that I've heard people say, and I certainly resonate with this, is it's work that I really believe I must do.
Oh, sure.
And and that I'm sort of uniquely qualified in some way to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the trying to get kind of outside of the inner stuff, the inside mm-hmm. stuff, is to think about, is the work compelling? Wendell Berry once said that you know that the work is compelling if you're working on something that can't be accomplished in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So reaching the entire world with the good news of Jesus Christ, that's a goal that I probably won't finish in my entire lifetime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But raising up more church workers to send people out to the harvest fields, that's kind of my life calling, at least for sure, what I'm doing right now.
I love every day of it.
Yeah.
So extremely busy. You're always on the move around here as well.
Yeah, I'm never stopping.
And it's the fall. And so what was kind of the... You talked about living to work or working to live. What was kind of the the moment that pushed you, and how did you get connected to CSL, and then what began the application process? Mm-hmm. What was it like? And then kind of what was that final determining factor for enrolling?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I was in Spanish class in my senior year when I made the decision to come to seminary.
All right.
Okay.
I've been filling out an application for a while all throughout the fall semester, and everything was kind of in, and they were just waiting to hear back from me if I'm coming. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure. I was back and forth. It was an every day. One day I'd be like, I'm going to seminary. I'm going to do this. And then the next day, how on earth could I be a pastor for somebody like my dad, who's been, you know, Lutheran longer than I've been alive, and all these things. I'm like, no, no way, not me. And so it was a day by day. One day, yes. Next day, no. And so I was sitting in Spanish class over Zoom, of course. And I was writing an escritura, a Spanish paper. Okay. And it was basically, the prompt was, what do you want to do when you graduate? Hmm. And I was like, shoot, I've been asking myself this question for like a really long time, and it changes every day. And I'm like, I don't know. And eventually I boiled it down to, if I don't think about money, if I don't think about what other people expect of me, if I don't think about what other people think I have to do right now, if I don't think about anything, any offers, any job offers, anything right now, what would be something I want to do, or that I see myself doing for the rest of my life, or that would be fulfilling? Mm. And the first thing and only thing that popped to mind was ministry.
Look at that.
And then, of course, I was like, shoot, now I have to get this into Spanish. But after that, I was like, okay, I'm going to say yes. And so this was April of 2021.
You're one of those guys.
And a month and a half later, I was here in St. Louis doing summer Greek, and I'm like, oh my goodness.
That's really interesting, because I there's so much of life that comes at us. I mm-hmm. think in the internet world, where you're constantly scrolling through social media, and there are all these voices that are bombarding you, and my to-do list and my calendar is kind of like that. And I think it's easy to get into this mindset and this just kind of phase of life where you're just reacting to mm-hmm. all the stuff that's coming at you. And that's fascinating that you took some time and asked those questions of, if there were no to-do list items,
yeah.
and there were no items on my calendar. Mm-hmm. And that's a really interesting way of kind of cutting through being busy. So many people say, mm-hmm. well, how are you doing? I'm busy.
Yeah.
And it means you're probably just reacting to stuff. Mm-hmm. Somebody said recently to me that you should say instead of saying, I'm too busy to do that, you should say, I'm not prioritizing that right now. Oh, I don't think I have that much guts. Oh,
I've had to say that to people.
Yeah, in nicer ways.
kind of sometimes, because it is one of those things. Yeah. I advocate for mental health care for everybody. And when I'm working with my counselor and I'm in one of these busy seasons, that's the first thing we do. We say, mm-hmm. okay, what's priority one, which is always the same thing. Faith and family.
Yep.
It comes with my faith and then Dorothy and the kids. And nothing outdoes those top priorities. And then what's next? And then it's, you know, usually my vocation as director of recruitment, graduate school, because that's really important in my life. And then how much time is required for those things? And then what comes after? And then and then you have to be like, man, sometimes friends want to do things. It's like, sorry, bro. I was out of town for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dorothy and the kids get me for the next couple of days. And I'll have to catch you guys probably next year or something like that. So that's, I mean, for your age, and you're not, I mean, well, actually, you are very young.
Hey, now, my knees don't tell me that every morning.
I was about to like try to make an age comparison, but that's just embarrassing. Anyway.
Hey, I'm only 23.
Anyway.
Could be my son.
You're too old to be my son.
Hey, but I've already had a career.
Not biologically. He could be my son. Anyway. So, but just to get to that moment, because I mean, I got to the seminary when I was 27. I was a long bloomer. I tell people all the time, it was God's timing, because if I'd have done undergraduate and graduated when I was 22, and I'd have come here when I was 22 in the same mindset that I was mm-hmm. then, oh man, I would have struggled more than I did when I was older.
Blink 182's song "Nobody Likes You When You're 23" came out when I was 23.
Listen,
I was at the seminary at the time, though, so yeah, I had some growing up to do.
But I just think that's incredible, especially again, where you were in life, what was going on in your mm-hmm. young adult life, having to go through college during COVID and all those other things, and when you slowed down. And just based upon everything you were doing, you just landed.
Ministry very, it is. Very wise. Very wise.
Well, I also had to grow up quick.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I worked at UPS, and I started there when I was 18, right out of high school, all throughout college, all throughout undergrad. And I got promoted to a supervisor mm-hmm. when I was still 18. I'd worked there 3 months, and I was just working my tail off. And then they said, well, hey, do you want to be a part-time supervisor? I said, yeah, sure. And I was a part-time supervisor working full-time hours.
Right.
But I was managing people that were twice my age, people who had kids my age, people who had grandkids my age, and telling them what to do and make the job get done. You know, it was something that really I had to grow up for. And I remember when I started going to UT, I was still waking up. I'd go to work between 2 and 4 in the morning, every morning. And at that time, I was driving home from the library one night from studying, and I saw these frat guys walking by, and I knew they were frat guys because they were wearing suits and, you know, jacket, tie, button down, everything, and then boxers and flip flops. And I was like, okay, all right, I'm just too old for this.
They were on a Zoom or something.
Yeah, that's right. I was like, I'm too old for this. So I had to mature quickly. And I noticed that it was almost weird because my parents were older. You know, my dad is 66 now. So he had me when he was 42. Wow. And, you know, they raised me where on the weekends we worked on the house. Mm. We grew up in a fixer-upper, and so I was working all the time. And every summer, my mom would put us through what we would call mom's boot camp. Mm. And we would go out and mulch all 12 gardens every summer. We had an acre and a half that we lived on, and it was put to full use, and it's always something to do for the family, something to do around the house, something to do on the house. And so, you know, I could have been a construction worker, contractor, somebody, just from all my experience working on a house.
What did your parents think about you deciding to come to seminary? How did kind of the initial, like, hey, mom and dad, I'm thinking about this, and then what was it like to say, all right, 100%, I'm going?
They were hands off.
Okay.
They were hands off the whole time because they said, we don't want to say yes or no and have you feel the pressure of your parents kind of making that decision for you almost.
Yeah.
And it was hands off, and it was them saying, all right, you discern this, you talk with the people you need to, we can give you some advice, but we're not going to say anything. And so when I said yes, they were like, we do think that is kind of the right decision. And we see that.
I pray that I'm like that with my kids when they're when they're adults and making adult decisions to it. Because, you know, everybody can parent the way they want to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even when it comes to career choices, same thing. Let's do pros and cons. Yeah. Let's think about all these different things. But I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
Because, you know, parents can be overbearing at times.
Yeah. Right? My parents raised me kind of strict when I was younger, but it instilled a good work ethic and good morals and stuff inside to where, you know, now I'm just almost a peer and they're some of my best friends, you know? So it's kind of a really cool family dynamic that I really love my parents.
That's awesome.
And them being supportive of me doing this. And even if I didn't do this, they'll stem them still supporting me, loving me, caring for me and all these things. It's really cool to see and really encouraging to see. So.
All right, time for a shout out to your parents because they're probably going to watch.
Mom, Dad, I love you guys. I won't always say that in person because I don't want your egos to get too inflated, but I love you guys.
Well, Of course, you should say it in person.
Oh, yeah. Well, I do. But my dad and I have a really good back and forth. He taught me sarcasm.
Oh.
And my mom doesn't always laugh at his jokes now. She just kind of groans at them. And whenever I make a joke, oh, she dies laughing. And it gets my dad so, it's great. I love it.
I'm a major troll, and my kids are mastering the skill. Anyway.
It'll come back to bite you. I'm a factor of that.
You know what? I'm okay with it because my Jonathan, my oldest, he's a major practical joker, and he's a little too good at it for his age. And anyway, there are times when I'm on the verge of really getting on his case, and then he hits me with a psych. I'm like, kid, I'm glad you know when the line is getting approached. I want to switch gears real quick, because again, we don't often have current students on Under the Fig Tree.
Yeah.
Kind of briefly, what's it like? You've been here now for a year and a half at CSO because you didn't really go home during the summer because you had Heber. No, so you've been living in St. Louis on our campus for a year and a half. What's that experience like for you?
There's always something going on. Mm-hmm. I will say that. There's always something going on. And if you are feeling isolated, it's probably on you.
Ooh.
Yeah. I work way too many jobs on campus, but I do that because I either get asked to because they're like, hey, you were recommended for this, and I'm just social. I get to know people, and it's a really close-knit community here, and there's always somebody's door you can go knock on, whether they're in married housing or in the dorms. So there's always something to do, always something to read for class. So.
Right.
So I became an instant fan of Dan. One day I was preaching in chapel and using barbecue and patience as an illustration. Yes. I was like, yeah, if you come over to my house, I'll probably give you a plate as long as you tell me it's good. And immediately Dan started texting me on weekends, did you barbecue?
Yeah.
Did you barbecue? And he finally hit gold because he finally came over. He's come over probably for a couple barbecues.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm a fan of that because Ben knows me. Like if you put something out there, I ask. And if you don't put it out there, I ask. That's probably one of the reasons why I'm a director of recruitment. So I'm not afraid to ask anybody for anything. And I value that because sometimes asking for things and things like that can be a symbol of pride, especially for men. But when you get into ministry, that's going to be a skill that's going to serve you and your parish well. Just being bold and asking for things is such an incredible thing. So I always, it was one of those things. I was like, man, Dan, because everybody will say it in passing, but Dan actually texted and was like, did you barbecue? I appreciate that.
Well, when people say something, I want to also hold them to it.
Well, and especially if people make the offer, because if they're making the offer, it's because they honor you and they care about you and they would love for the opportunity to. I had people in the parish all the time that would ask me stuff, and my first inclination was to say, oh no, that's okay. But then I kind of realized I'm dishonoring them.
Yeah.
Because I'm dissing them. I'm saying no, I don't want your thing that you're offering. And I think sometimes hospitality is about receiving hospitality just as much as it is offering it.
Yeah.
Well, and that was, for me and Dorothy, when we were deciding to move on campus, after I received my call, and we were trying to think about it, middle of COVID, part of it was convenience. It's in the middle of COVID, it might be nice to live on campus. But then as we were going through it, it was also one of those things, being able to be present and to be able to serve prospective students as a director of recruitment, but also our current students. Because I was not that long ago, I was a student here. And when, the faculty members and staff members opened up their doors, it made this place so much more vibrant. And if we could help contribute to that, we just wanted to. So, what else about being a student? There's intramurals. Yeah. There's all types of things. Mm-hmm. We just had Oktoberfest not too long ago. And the Jambalaya Fest, shout out to the church in New Orleans that comes up and does that for us.
Yeah, I think it's St. Paul's. Yeah. And Pastor Paul.
Oh, it's so
God
good.
God bless him. Yeah. I was traveling for Jambalaya Fest. Dorothy did get me some Jambalaya, but man, so it's my favorite event.
So good.
Anyway.
I was coming back from my institutional module out at a military base a couple hours away from here.
Scott's?
Yeah.
I mean, so
or no, not Scott's. Fort Leonard Wood.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It was it was a little ways out there. Got to meet LCMS Army chaplain, follow him around for the day, meet with a Navy chaplain who's I think Episcopalian or something.
Okay.
And another Army chaplain that's Independent Baptist, and just kind of talk with chaplains to see what it is they do and stuff like that. Yeah. And
chaplaincy on your radar?
It is.
Yeah, good for you.
I'm putting in my package right now for Navy.
Awesome.
So
it was on my radar. My dad is a career Marine.
Mm-hmm.
I would lie and say it's still not a pool. And now that I don't want to say that they're desperate for chaplains, but they're widening.
No. Yeah.
They are. I mean, they are desperate for
huge,
chaplains.
It's a huge need. Mission field.
But it is married with kids. It has to be something that everybody agrees to. So we're happy here. But yeah, that's good for you to double down and serve. At least consider serving the military, serve as a chaplain and a pastor. The highest regard for that. I mean, I knew you were a good guy. Well, Dan, we always get to this moment where the conversation, one day we might be able to hold an audience for a couple hours. I don't think today's that day, though. We're getting to the point where of our segment, we've been doing this ever since we've relaunched Under the Fig Tree, where it's things are either ripe for the picking or you want to leave them on the tree. It is by far the most subjective and judgmental part of the podcast, and this may or may not qualify you for ministry in the future. It probably won't, but we're going to go through a series of random things. If you like it, it's ripe for the picking. If you don't like it, leave it on the tree. We flip a coin. That's how I decide everything in my life.
I'm ready to go.
There we go.
How about playing in leaves?
Playing in leaves, oh, absolutely. I'm taking that one.
All right.
So it's right for the picking. Picking.
All right. Picking. Right.
What do you think, Micah?
So
he doesn't want to get the sneaks dirty.
So listen, I don't even walk through wet grass. And this is what's going through my mind, jumping into a pile of leaves. So if there is a big pile of leaves, because we're getting close to that part of the year, and my kids are out there, I'll do it.
You'll jump into the pile
with my kids.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not snow, and so
yeah.
But all I'm thinking of is how itchy I'm going to be.
Oh yeah.
Afterwards, 100%. I have very sensitive skin, and I am going to be on fire afterwards. Yikes. So the joy of doing it with my kids is enough to be itchy for. Mm-hmm. But if you're just going to ask me if I wouldn't do it, I'd leave it on the tree.
See, I thought you were one of the guys that was like, "Oh, there's bugs in there."
Not bugs. Oh, no. It's just the little pricks from the leaves. It's going to irritate my skin, and I'm going to be unrealistically itchy afterwards. That's all.
Get you some lotion, and everything will be good.
Man, if there was something that would help this, I could get into dermatology.
It's leave it on the tree for me. It on the tree. I would be thrilled to rake up piles of leaves for my kids to jump in, but I ain't jumping. It's not for me.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm still 23, so
there you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree, pork rinds.
Pork rinds, ripe for the picking.
Yeah. See, Ben's a pretentious eater. Also, so I knew he was going to leave it on the tree.
Oh, see, I hear he likes really spicy things.
Yeah. You know what? Shoot, I was going to bring a fig today. I picked a fig.
From the quad?
From the quad.
Are they really?
It was green, and I set it on my windowsill to let it ripen.
Okay.
And it's not, they're not ready yet, not but they're there. Close. They're really, really close. So, but yeah, pork rinds, 100% leave it on the tree. See, my parents liked pork rinds growing up.
Pork rinds are
and
delicious.
And for me, it was like,
So Sam's Club has like a big barrel of them for like $4.99.
I mean, part of it, look, is if you grew up around pigs.
Yeah.
Like, no, because I know what pork rind is, just skin.
Yeah.
Deep fried.
Yeah. You wash them off.
No,
deep fried them bad boys. They're good to
Have you ever seen a pig like in a pig's tail? You don't just like spray them off and they're like, ooh, it's clean.
Listen, when you have a whole pork roast, the crackling, dude.
Absolutely.
The skin on animals.
Picking that stuff off.
The skin on animals when it's roasted and cooked right is like the best part. Talitha won't eat like fried chicken skin. I'm like,
skin, yeah. But I also
chickens
raise
are gross too.
I also raise chickens.
I was gonna say chickens are also pretty gross.
But at least you can pick all the feathers off, and but pigs.
Man, listen,
woof.
So what? So you don't eat ham or bacon?
Oh, that's on the inside.
Well,
that's
on the bacon. Okay.
That's totally fine.
So when you take a shower, then. And you get clean. Are you saying that pigs can't get clean?
Trying to split a hair.
You didn't grow up on a farm, did you?
No, I did helping out local farmers and stuff. I never worked directly with pigs, but I did cattle.
Yeah. Okay. I dip them a little hot sauce, man. Pork rinds.
Yeah, cattle are 100% cleaner than pigs. Oof. Mm. All right. Mowing your own grass. Do you like to mow grass?
Ripe for the picking. Absolutely.
What is going on?
I love
cutting grass too, bro. What? Yeah, I love
the smell of it and getting out there. And I mean, we've got an acre and a half, so it takes a couple hours to do it. And sometimes we'll just push mow it.
I hate cutting grass. And I will just admit, I am evidently a pretentious city guy, city slicker, but I grew up doing that. I have terrible allergies, especially to grass.
I have bad grass allergies, but I still love it.
My wife was like, why don't you put one of those masks on? And I would, 10 seconds in, it would be coming off because it's too hot. Too much. Sorry, I'll spare our listeners the details, but
living on campus is really good for you.
Oh, yeah. I am 100% thrilled for other people to mow the grass.
I was going to say, we do live a bougie lifestyle. We don't have to cut our own grass. I'll say this. I love the time I reclaim from not having to do yard maintenance. We don't have to shovel our own sidewalks when it snows, which I actually love more. But when I was a homeowner, I mean, Saturday morning, I get up, and that's what I'm doing. And, perfect edges along the sidewalk. I love cutting my grass. It was a thing.
For me, it was like I could be doing a million other things. You can't listen to a book while you're mowing.
You can.
I guess evidently didn't have the right headphones.
Okay, I was gonna that's a must. Like put in headphones, put on a podcast or some jams, and I'm good to go, bro. I had a grass mowing playlist on Apple Music.
Wow.
By the way, not that long ago, a commenter left in YouTube when we were talking about Google Maps versus Apple Maps. You can do multiple stops on Apple Maps. Now I have to go on and check. Ooh. So Apple Maps are officially better than Google Maps. You heard it here first. It's official.
Yikes.
Where was it? We were just out as a team, and Google Maps didn't have the restaurant we were going to or something.
It was like just last week.
And it was on Apple Maps. And then we
found it eventually that it was like Mr. Beast Burger.
That's right. So that didn't put Apple Maps over the top. We were wondering if Apple Maps was right and Google Maps was wrong. But yeah, you're right. It was a ghost kitchen.
It was.
Yeah.
Ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree, water skiing.
Ooh, see, that's the thing. I've never really done much of it, so I don't know. I might leave that one on the tree for right now, but I would be more than happy to take it off.
I've never been water skiing. I've never tried wakeboarding either. I like water sports.
Yeah,
I come up with these at all times of the day, and they go onto my notes list. So there's no rhyme or reason to any of them. They're very random.
Mm-hmm. I like water skiing. I haven't done a ton of it. I'd say I've probably been out 4 or 5 times. It's a lot of work. It's a full body workout. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because I'm so tall, when you're coming up, it's just I have a higher point of gravity.
Right.
And so if you get wobbling just a little bit, it's easy to go down. And
you're gonna eat it.
I love tubing, I love knee boarding, but skiing, if you hit a big wave and you're just 6'3", just face plant.
I know your pain. I'm 6'3".
And you're going much faster with water skiing than you are with tubing or whatever. So
I've been messing around on a jet ski and turned too hard and thrown myself. And even then, water isn't always soft.
Yeah. No,
that's right. When you're going fast, it does hurt. But yeah.
All right, this might be a controversial one. I hope it is actually. Christmas music in November. I was gonna say October, and I thought that might really
trigger some people.
But Christmas music, not Advent music. I mean Christmas music in November.
Is it before or after Thanksgiving?
Before.
Ooh, leave it on the tree.
I mean, it's a leave it on the tree for me. So, it's one of these things, because you didn't say Christmas hymns. I think you can sing Christmas hymns.
Yeah, you can sing Christmas hymns.
But I'm talking about, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which I don't really care for anyway. Just leave it on the tree. I guess I'm a Scrooge.
I I love Christmas music, and I could probably listen to it all year long. And both the Christmas hymns as well as Jolly Old Saint Nick.
All right. I don't get crazy when they start putting decorations and things out or when people put them up, but I really like Thanksgiving.
Me too. And I love Thanksgiving. I love the food, and I feel like you're starting to downplay that holiday by pushing Christmas. I mean,
I got to lead up to it.
I mean, I've got a friend who's like you, but you're downplaying Thanksgiving
by starting to listen to Christmas music. I want my turkey and stuffing
dressings.
I don't know if I ever quite articulated that way.
That's fantastic.
But like, I look forward to Thanksgiving. I don't know if you can downplay Christmas.
He's downplaying Thanksgiving.
Favorite Christmas albums ever is Christmas Unicorn by Sufjan Stevens. And he's got this song, I'm a Christmas Unicorn. And it is this huge mashup of like hymns. And he even has not only Silver and Gold is the album that it's on. Okay. But the song, I'm a Christmas Unicorn, is this huge mashup between like Lenten hymns, because Christ that is coming is going to be the Christ who goes to the cross. So this album is such a weird mix of like bad church choir singing Silent Night and these crazy crazy Christmas tunes like you grew up watching.
So it's like a Charlie Christian, Brown. It's like a Christian Weird Al.
Kinda. That's an interesting. He's just an agglomeration. He's definitely Christian. He's a confessional Christian. I think he's maybe Presbyterian or something. But he just likes it all, and I like listening to that song. I could listen to that song all year long.
You like what you like.
Yeah, yeah. I'm weird. Yeah. Our listeners clearly know that about me now. I'm bougie and pretentious, and I run the wine society, and I'm a city slicker.
Well, hey, I went to that for the first time.
Yeah,
that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, we didn't. There was no wine shaming, right?
No. You know what I started putting for color is because I don't know how to tell. I put red, and then I put
yellow,
like reddish brown.
Oh, that's
and then
like probably like
brownish
a
red,
one, right?
And
that's,
I was so confused as to how the. Okay, that works.
Yeah, we could go long into the differences between something like a Chianti, which is going to have kind of a brick red, and something like a Zinfandel, which is going to be almost purple.
Pink.
But
pink?
No, you mean white Zinfandel?
Or
you just offended me.
Anyway,
and this is above.
Here we go.
Me.
This is how Under the Fig Tree breaks apart. I don't know what a Zinfandel is.
We start talking about wine. Yeah. It all just goes down.
Dorothy,
our listeners, don't drink white Zinfandel.
Well, yeah. Dorothy worked at a wine and cigar shop, so she knows quite a bit about it. I like wine, but it's just give me a good tasting wine. That's all.
Yeah,
yeah. That's
take us home with one more.
What last right for the picking or leaving on the tree? And this is interesting because you're also our youngest listener so far. So I'll be interested to hear what you say. Well. 90s teen sitcoms. So like Dawson's Creek or Saved by the Bell.
So, you know what's funny is I grew up without cable.
Oh.
And I grew up without much of anything.
Good
so it was movies for my family.
Oh. Yeah.
So we're big movie people. Yeah. We would quote movies to each other in movie lines, and then the person has to guess what movie it's from.
Oh, nice.
And then if they don't get it, that means, hey, that's on your movie watch list. You have to watch that movie again.
Okay.
Ooh. And we have like a wall of movies. And I have friends who come, whenever I go back to town, I've got a couple friends who we regularly schedule, all right, we're coming over and you guys are watching a movie and we're watching a movie together. So I would have to leave that one on the tree just because I never grew up with it.
Fair.
So
good for you.
So you mentioned Saved by the Bell or Dawson's Creek. What are the 90210? Is that, would you consider
Beverly
that
Hills,
90s?
Yeah. I never really watched Beverly Hills 90210. And like Dawson's Creek and, well, Saved by the Bell first is what like immediately came to my mind. Dawson's Creek is like later 90s.
Right.
But yeah, just shows along that like where like teen angst is like what you're trying to work through.
Urkel.
Man, I love Family Matters. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, even like in the early 90s, because I was born in 84. So in like the early 90s, I wasn't necessarily a teen. That's why Dawson's Creek came to mind, even though I did still watch Saved by the Bell. Like Salute Your Shorts or Hey Dude. You didn't know about Salute for Freud? It's like about kids at a camp, which was more in line with how old I was, and they had like a camp counselor. You might have been more like, well, anyway.
I was probably in college, bro.
Well, anyway, I wasn't going to say. But, well, anyway.
You know, I was born in 99.
Yeah,
right?
99. But, like, but see, but
I mean, if you guys wanted me to watch these sitcoms, I'd be an infant sitting there.
Some things are classics. I've seen movies that were made in the 70s and listened to music that dates me.
Oh, yeah.
I was a senior in college. 1999.
I was a freshman in high school. There you anyway. Go.
So for me, totally ripe for the picking. I'm a huge pop culture fan. I love it. I love all of it. It's it's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, even like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, that would have been even more of adult level teen show, but it was definitely made for teens and not adults when it was made. Yeah.
That was out when I was in college.
Yeah. All right. Well, cool. Well, Daniel, thank you for joining us.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Thank you for, making that decision to come and be trained next year. I'm sure you have your pre-vicarage meetings going on right now.
Yeah.
Which are all exciting. Really good.
That's so cool.
Part of my favorite part of the second year was, you know, anyway, I won't spoil
it's 180 days to call day.
Look there at that. Go.
That's all I'm saying.
And then, you'll
vicarage
be off.
Vicarage placement.
Yeah. For vicarage, come back for your fourth year. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have you on again and
see
what you've learned since then.
That would be cool. That'd be awesome. I'd love to be here.
Awesome. And then also just thank you for helping us in our work and all that you do for the seminary. Because you do a ton as a student and as a worker as well.
Yeah. I've got like 6 jobs. So somebody's got to make sure the seminary campus is still running.
Just thinking like how many people have to be replaced when he goes off to vicarage. Well,
I have one public service announcement for our listeners. That I almost forgot.
Right.
Listeners and viewers, we want you to give us some suggestions. I want you to give us some suggestions. Micah is very confident in his ripe for the picking or leave it under the tree, leave it on the tree, leave it under the tree. That's kind of a Christmas theme. ripe for the picking or leave it on the tree. Would you suggest some things, especially for me? So these are things that I will pay attention. So if you leave it in the YouTube comments or find me on Twitter or Facebook and send me a message, I would love to hear your ideas for what should we do on Ripe for the Picking or Leave It Under the Tree. Yeah. Leave it on the tree.
And we also didn't mention, but if you are a listener and you've been thinking and mulling this over, and if you hit the link in the description that for our request for information and you fill that out and you're a new person filling out a form, Ben will send you a book.
Yes, I will.
And right now we're sending out copies of Dr. Leo Sanchez's Sculptor Spirit, which is a remarkable book.
It is, and it's also a textbook. That's one of my books for second year here.
Yep,
we're saving you money right there.
Look at that. Yeah, you could be ahead of the game. Well, thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining us under the fig tree. And just remember, if you yourself are thinking about ministry, hit that link. Let us get in contact with you and begin those conversations to help you through your discernment process. And if you know anybody who you think would be a good church worker in the near or far future, please make sure that you share Under the Fig Tree with them. Subscribe to Concordia Seminary's YouTube page and please like these videos so that we know you're listening and enjoying. And thank you all for joining us.